Hey, nonfiction. Yeah, well, that's how it goes. And by the way, I edit these. So mistakes. If you say something kind of flubby, like if you say culture blend, just give it a pause, say it again, and maybe back up a little bit in the phrase. An example would be, hey, nonfiction branders, this is DP Knutin at the Nonfiction Brand Culture Brand Edition. And with me is...
the one and only Leah Rowe.
Leah Rowe is kind of interesting because she comes from a land where culture is queen, and she's the queen of that culture. And let's give the listeners a little bit of background as to who you are, where you work, and what you do.
Yeah, great. Let's jump in. So yeah, hi everyone. I'm Leah Rowe. I work at a health IT company here in Madison called HealthFinch. And I am in charge of everything people ops and culture related. And culture is my passion. It's my obsession. I talk a lot about my why in life, my big why. And the reason why I'm here is to really help people to live completely fulfilled, joyful lives. And I feel like work is such a huge part of every person's life. And so the work that I do on a daily basis is really to help foster an environment where great culture can be built at organizations so that people can truly thrive and be fulfilled by the work that they do.
What is your title at HealthFinch?
VP of People Operations.
Well, you're one of many, because People Operations, HR, Human Relations, is that
Human Resources.
Human Resources.
That's like the lame way to say.
It sounds like you're talking about human plywood. Do we have enough human plywood in the back?
Yeah, HR is super, well, I don't know if it's technically outdated, but, you know, I work at a tech startup, and so... It's a lot trendier to be in people ops than it is human resources.
Yeah. I kind of like it better, though. I mean, because I'm a language guy, and words have meaning, believe it or not, and subtlety. Like, human resources turns humans into a commodity that is stored in a back room. People operations is a whole lot different, because you're talking about, you're recognizing the fact that people are people, not commodities.
Sure.
And they need to do things for the business in a way that is good for the business. But the new meaning of people operations includes the business has to do good things for the people. And I think that's kind of a nuanced difference between people operations and human resources.
Yeah, totally. I think just having the word people in there really makes it, you know, real that we are focused on the people. And I think also, you know, when I think of typical HR, typical human resources, and again, this is just my own personal opinion, but I think about, you know, stuffy people who sit in a room, complain about the people that work there, and then when someone comes in with a problem, they explain it. The HR department really doesn't do much other than record notes, and then the people go back and do their jobs and are like, you know, I told HR, but HR didn't do anything. Whereas, at least in terms of what I do in people ops, you know, it's about so much more than just listening to people's complaints. It's about recruitment. It's about talent development. It's about employee engagement. It's just so much more. And I think, you know, I'm not a classically trained HR person. Before I started doing people ops at HealthFinch, I always said the only thing I knew about HR is I think I was reported to it once because my now husband and I were secretly dating and we were working together. So I come at what I do from just a very different background. And it's not, I'm not HR trained. So I think that that's different for what you know this about me. I love people and I want to help people live great lives. And so that's really where I come in for the work that I do.
Well, I've read a number of things over the past year, 2 years, about people coming to the realization that HR is not there to protect the employee. It's there to protect the company.
Yeah.
And it sounds like people operations is there not to protect either. It's to support either. It's to enhance either. And it's ideally creating a culture that is mutually satisfactory, mutually beneficial, mutually wonderful for all parties involved.
Yeah, I actually really like that. I totally agree. You know, I've also read a lot of things on how HR is there to protect the company and not the individual. And I do, yeah, I like that people ops is there to really enhance both sides. I will say, though, you know, the people ops department, and especially what I do, like I am not the culture creator. I can't create culture on my own and make sure that and tell everyone this is the culture we're building. I heard someone say it recently that really culture is like an orchestra. And so you can have someone at your company that is the conductor, if you will, but everyone has to play their instrument. Everyone has to play a part. So what I do is I foster the environment for great culture to be built, but I really step back. because it's really built by every single person at the company as opposed to me or the people ops department.
Well, and this is kind of where the intersection between culture and brand come together, because as you know, you've seen me speak and heard my blather about culture brand, but the understanding that cultures happen, but brands are planned, and a brand, a well-planned brand that is enforced, can help create or provide the foundation or launch pad for this culture that you're talking about. Because I agree with you, culture is a sociological phenomenon. It happens between people. Mm-hmm. And in a company, it happens between all the people in that company.
Totally.
So you can't control what that culture is, but you can provide a foundation for it from which to grow, or a launch pad from where it can really take off.
I totally agree. We say a lot, you know, culture is something that will organically just happen. You know, you and I sitting in this room right now together, we are creating a culture among us. You put two people together, a culture will form. And so, you know, you hear me talk a lot about intentional culture. So culture will just happen, but you need to be intentional about building the right culture, because, you know, and again, there are so many different definitions of culture out there, but the one that really resonates with me is that culture is your company's values and beliefs manifested in the behavior of everyone at the organization. So your culture is ultimately built by how people behave. So I agree, you need a strong foundation, you need a strong brand in order for that culture to really be built off of.
Well, and it's important that people understand where you're coming from. Health Finch is a completely remote workforce. Is that correct?
Well, we're not completely remote. We are remote first. So what that means is we've built all of our teams, all of our tools, all of our processes around the concept of being remote. And there is no requirement to come into the office. However, we do have an office in Madison, Wisconsin. And the reason why we have an office is really because we started out as a company with five people and everyone went into the office. Then, in order to really scale and grow, we realized we needed to be able to recruit from, you know, outside of Madison. We have great talent here, but we needed to recruit nationwide. And so we made the decision that, you know, we'll go remote because all of our work can be done from wherever. You don't need to physically be on site. But we also were intentional about building a company that was inclusive of how everyone likes to work, because we do have people that really enjoy coming into the office. That's where they are focused. That's where they get the most done. And so we have the office in Madison, Wisconsin, but there's no requirement to ever come to it. So I'm an office employee, you could call me. And I go into the office once, maybe every 2 weeks. And other than that, I work at home or at a coffee shop. So we are remote first. So we do have an office, but that's about it.
Barely. I mean, compared to an office,
yeah.
Compared to an office that has set office hours where everybody kind of feels the cultural, social pressure to be there, not at 9 or not at 8:30, but a little bit before, because the culture dictates that. Yeah. And nobody leaves at 5. They always leave at 5:17 because the culture dictates that.
Yeah.
Sometimes that culture is created by the people. Sometimes it's created by the requirements or the policies of the company itself. It's really a mix. But I think the key point we're both making is you can say all you want, but culture happens because people do. There's a difference between mm-hmm. do and say, and culture is all about do.
Totally.
At the same time, branding can be quite a bit about say, which is mm-hmm. we are saying this about ourselves. These are the things that are important to us. This is our personality. This is our style and tone. Mm-hmm. These are our colors.
Yep.
All of those things are dictated or captured so that everybody knows what they are. Mm-hmm. Any company who's ever seen a PowerPoint done by five different people has seen their brand in action, because one person has Times New Roman, the other one's using Comic Sans, someone else is using Papyrus, and someone else has pirated a font from who knows where. And it's like, what are you guys doing? And the answer is, we're doing culture, which is, I do whatever I want. Brand pulls that back and says, wait a minute. Our set display font is, mm-hmm. our set text font is, please adhere to these rules. And by the way, we're going to enforce it every time you do a presentation and I see you're doing it wrong. I'm going to come up and say, hey, you know what? Let's review our brand standards for a second here. Mm-hmm. And it's not because you're a bad person. It's because you may not be as attuned to the brand as it should be. Mm-hmm. And that's where communicating that brand via culture becomes so important. This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus. Well, I want to talk about brand culture mismatch or problem that everybody's aware of, and that is Uber.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's going to be a case study that's studied by B school students forever.
Yeah.
Why? Because of two things. Now, without going into detail or litigating the whole event, I just want to say that Uber, the brand, fell into problems with a combination of the way they roll, the way they do things, and the way they reacted to it in the form of specifically Travis Kalanick's reaction to things publicly. Now, of course, one of the most famous incidents was captured on a camera in an Uber as a driver was trying to tell him the challenges of being a driver for Uber, and it got a little bit out of hand. Anybody on a candid camera can look like an idiot. But the thing I want to point out is that after the board of directors decided to oust Travis Kalanick as the CEO, whatever his title was, I'm not going to say whether I think it's right or wrong, but I will say it was really interesting that the very next day, over 1,000 Uber employees signed a petition to have him reinstated. That, to me, strictly from an outside point of view, was the culture saying that he is our culture, we are his culture, that is our brand, like it or not. Mm. Well, that's a huge problem. And let me tell you, I don't have the Uber app on my phone anymore. I do have Lyft. Because of what went on. I saw it as kind of a net misogynistic culture. I didn't support that.
And you don't align with it. Yeah.
I don't align with it. My personal culture, my personal brand does not align with that product. Therefore, it's off my phone.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's a good point. I've also heard people say, you know, there's no such thing as a good or a bad culture. There's just a right culture for a company, a right culture for you. And yeah, I think that's a really good example of that because ultimately, I don't align with that culture either. I'm just going to say that. But yeah, ultimately, you have to really look at a company and see who they are. And that goes back to the branding. Know who, this is what DPO says, know who you are so you can be it. I think that's trademarked, right?
Oh, yeah. I put a TM on everything.
Do you get royalties every time I say that?
Yeah, I should.
And so they are saying that they know who they are and they want to be that. And so it's up to, you know, the consumers to really say, is that the kind of culture that I align with? Is that the kind of culture that I want to support? Is that the brand that represents me as an individual?
Well, and that's my point about the whole culture brand and kind of why we're doing this podcast as one of the kind of mini podcasts within the greater Nonfiction Brand podcast family. Culture and brand do not exist in isolation. You can't have a, look, we're green, we care about the world, and then pollute the Gulf of Mexico. Sorry, BP, not buying it. You know, and other brands as well. They present a public front, and yet they're private actually doing it. It doesn't match. There's a mismatch there.
Totally. And I think that is so important about culture and about brand is that you have to, culture's ultimately built by what you do. And so what you say to the world, you need to match that with your actions. And I think that is the most important thing. You know, an example at HealthFinch is we say we're remote first. We absolutely are. If you come and interview at our office, so many times I come in because I have an interview scheduled and the person's waiting in the hallway. And I'm like, oh, did you ring the doorbell? And they're like, yeah, I did. No one came. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think anyone's in the office today. You know, so they can see firsthand from the get-go at the interview, like, they don't just say they're remote first. Like, legit, there's no one in the office.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense because you're not just saying it and then not doing it. You're saying it and we're doing
it.
So we're saying, our brand is saying it, but our culture is doing it.
Right.
And so if anyone's listening to this podcast saying culture brand, I don't really get it. Just think of it this way. Brands say, culture does.
I love that.
TM.
Yeah, trademark that. Let's start
Darn
making
right.
royalties.
Well, what is the biggest cultural challenge that you've faced at HealthFinch?
Oh, gosh. Today?
Well, that's the whole point because culture is this bubbling cauldron and you never know what's going to suddenly burst out of that cauldron.
No, it's constantly evolving, which that's what makes it so fun because every day is different. And when I say fun, some days it's like, that's why culture sucks so much. But ultimately, it's really fun. The biggest cultural, you know, it's, again, there are just so many different things. We're a company of 50, we're scaling, so there's tons of growing pains. But I think you know, one of the biggest challenges we had was when I first started, we are a remote first company, but having two kind of very different cultures when I started, having the people who came into the office culture and then the people who never came into the office culture, and trying to really bridge the company and have one cohesive culture was a huge challenge for us. And I'm not saying that there needs to be only one culture at every company. I think each department works, you know, uniquely and differently and can have their own kind of sub mini cultures. But ultimately, you need an overarching brand. You need an overarching culture. You need your values. You need something that everyone buys into and everyone lives and breathes. And so that was something that we really struggled with a few years ago.
Well, let's talk about that, because if you're a business at a certain scale, you're likely to have departments. And some of those departments are widely disparate in terms of the types of people that are attracted to it. Let's just pick two. You've got the creative department, where you've got graphic designers and writers and artists and videographers and editors.
So the department you thrive in.
Yeah. And then we've got people with the C, the P, and the A at the end of their name, like you. I mean, accounting.
Yeah. I'm a recovering CPA.
Well, good for you. Welcome to the dark side. But you get what I mean, which is One side is all about kind of squishy, fluffy stuff of, I can't tell you why that shade of blue is better, but it is.
Yeah.
And don't ask me why, because I don't know. And I'll get kind of upset because you asked me and I just know it is. And I can't believe you can't see it.
Yeah.
And then the other side, which is this number column totals and this one doesn't. The one that totals is better. The one that doesn't, we have a problem. Let's dissect.
Yep.
I mean, you can't really get a whole lot farther apart than that. And the whole thing is, what you were kind of saying is that there's the possibility of subcultures within a greater corporate culture or a greater company culture. Is that true? Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, yeah, that's true. And I, you know, if you had asked me 2 years ago if I thought that was okay, I would have said, no, absolutely not. There needs to be one culture and everyone has to buy into it. And there can't be like differences between departments that'll cause toxic relationships and all that. But over the years, I've learned.
Welcome to wisdom.
Yes, I've gotten some wisdom. You know, I've really seen that it's important for different departments to have their own subcultures, and it really bonds them together as a team. And it works well unless they have, you know, values within their department that conflict with the company's values. And so just making sure that if a department does have their own subset of values of how they like to work, it can roll up into the larger business culture. I think that's great, actually. I think it gets the teams to be more productive and happier, ultimately.
Well, and we're just cracking the seal on this conversation.
Oh, yeah. That's a deep one we can get into.
And we will be over time. But for now, what I'd like to do is introduce you to a feature I'm calling What's on Your Radar.
Ooh.
And I'm sorry to put you flat-footed on the spot here, Leah, but what I'm looking for is a recommendation about something that's on your radar. It could be a TED Talk, it could be a book, it could be a podcast, it could be a TV show, whatever. And ideally, it has something to do with the subject we're talking about, which is culture and branding, or culture brand. TM. Do you have anything that comes to mind immediately?
Well, something that's on my radar, and I'm sure you're sick of hearing me talk about it. It's been on my radar for the past couple of months, and that is Simon Sinek's Start With Why. You know, that book and his TED Talk was really, really instrumental for me the past couple of months, because it's something that I had always been doing. I had been living by starting with why, but it wasn't until I read his book that I had the language to use. And ultimately, I'm like, darn it, why didn't I think of this book 10 years ago so I could be like a multi-bazillionaire like Simon Sinek now? I don't know if he's that rich, but anyways. But yeah, Start With Why has really been something that I've really been going back to. It's been really helpful for me in not only just my personal life and how I live, but also the work that I do in terms of culture at HealthFinch, because I've realized so much more that if you start with why and you explain to people why you're doing what you're doing and why it's important, that is how you get people to rally around your ideas. That's how you ultimately motivate people to participate. And again, culture is built by behavior, by what people do. And so that's really been huge for me to really be looking at everything I'm asking people to do or everything that I'm doing in my life and starting with why and explaining why it's important.
To be clear, Simon Sinek, spelled S-I-N-E-K,
yes,
not C-Y-N-I-C, which is interesting because he's one of the least cynical people I think I've ever seen or heard or read. I first discovered him via a TED Talk, which is like one of the top 10 TED Talks of all time, I think.
Yeah.
And a lot of, every time I watch it, you can almost see light bulbs going off over the heads of the people in the audience. Mm-hmm. It's now become a book and kind of a cottage industry all around the title of the talk or title of the book, Start With Why. How did you first discover this? Was it via the TED Talk or did you pick up the book?
I think somebody posted the TED Talk on LinkedIn. And I think that's how I first discovered it. And I think it was the short version. I think it was like the 2.5 minute one and just kind of had a light bulb go off. And so then I picked up the book and I'm one of those people that when I read a book, I'll like, what's that called? When you fold the page, if you want to go back to it.
Dog ear.
Yeah, dog ear. Yeah. I think I dog eared every other page. Like, this is not realistic. I don't think I can go back and reread the entire book every day.
Yeah, it is an excellent book and an excellent talk, but it's more an excellent philosophy.
Totally. You can apply it to so many different things. And I've given a few talks lately on how you can apply his golden circle framework that he talks about in the book to actually building culture. And you can apply it to everything. And it's so simple and easy. Are you going to talk about what's on your radar?
I'm not sure. I mean, I have so many opinions and I don't know, sometimes I get tired of listening to myself talk. That's kind of culture brandy. That's a good product. TM that. Culture brandy, that'll build your culture.
That'll be our, when we have our launch party, we could go to a bar and serve culture brandies.
That's right, brandy old fashions here in Wisconsin. It would be very popular, just saying. So what's on my radar? Culture brandy. It's a product yet to be developed, but when it is, we'll let you know. It'll make incredible brandy old fashioned, which is the actual alcoholic drink of the state of Wisconsin?
Is it the official one?
I don't know. Just about any alcoholic drink is the official drink of the state of Wisconsin. Okay, so that wraps up the first episode with Leah Rowe of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, Culture Brand Edition. I'm DP Knutton, and she is
Leah Rowe.
And we are the ones that love talking about culture and brand in the same sentence. And I just want to remind you, the essence of a nonfiction brand is knowing who you are, so you can be it.